Greed is good. Greed is right. Greed works.
Up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
Trip. On a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun.
Well, North Bay Stacks and Jacks, not them out. Big Pappas on the board. SP Futures down 20. NASDAQ Futures down 56. After a down day yesterday, we had Dow Futures down 330. Most of that's because of Microsoft's down 357. But the big kicker is another one of these earnings plays with some massive move. Salesforce came out with bad guidance around $42. It's 15%. I mean, this stuff is moving way more, it seems, than the straddles would indicate they were going to move. I looked in here and I thought the straddle was about $20, and now it's like double that. Do we have Professor Lou?
Good morning, sir. How are you?
All right. The big debate yesterday on Stocks and Jacks was how much of the seemingly $1 billion of legal fees over the next year on this NCAA settlement are going to go to your firm.
Zero going to my firm, but what I think is quite likely, and I as one of those several sports lawyers that we actually have, I think that you're going to start seeing insurance play a larger and larger role in these kinds of cases, and I'm sure colleges are going to start taking out policies and as to protect themselves on these NIL deals, and there may be some policies out there right now that'll cover some of these payments. And as they do, firms like mine will start entering the fray.
You got to wet your beak, Lou.
Well, we wet our beak based on. Actually, we've got more work than we know what to do with right now. And the biggest issue for us and a number of other law firms is hiring qualified people to manage these litigations. So we'll have to see how it develops, but I think, you know, of that award or that settlement that was entered into in the House case, I think you're probably talking somewhere in the 20-30% range for the attorneys for that law firm. So not a bad couple of years' work.
I'm kind of curious. Are the people who are if people are working on, you know, the details, and it seems to me the thing lacks a boatload of detail, at least what I've read. Do you bill these guys monthly? Who pays you? Is there a guy that runs the money or something? I mean, and the money's not there yet. I mean, who's paying who? How do you get paid?
So these kinds of cases are typically taken on what's called a contingency basis. So the clients have been funding some minimal amount of money, maybe offsetting some expenses, but the bulk of the payout comes when the settlement payments start getting made by the NC2A. And I don't know what the arrangements of the settlement agreement are, whether it's a lump sum payment, whether that's paid within, you know, 45 to 60 days of the signing of the agreement, or whether it's a pay over time kind of arrangement. I suspect if you're the law firm, you end and you want to minimize your tax hit, you have them pay this out over, you know, 2 years maybe, and stretch the payments out a little bit.
Well, the question I was having, the main question I have, and I've read a few articles, and it seems like the people writing the articles are, I'm getting some information out of them, but it seems like they don't, in some sense, they don't know any more than I am, but they're just writing. The NIL thing comes out of the Supreme Court, and it had to do with the schools, for whatever reason, thinking they own people's name, image, and likeness while they were under scholarship. Or even if they're in school, I guess if we were walking on, I'm not sure how that worked, but...
Correct. The Supreme Court opinion said that the NCAA was effectively a combination that was restricting trade in the sale of likenesses and images for college athletes, and they couldn't do it.
Okay, so it does not surprise me at all if some guy or some girl or somebody even on the lower end that had an offer to do something simple like to perform in a play in the summertime or something, and the school said you couldn't do it. It doesn't surprise me that if that was me, hey, you bleeps cost me, you know, 10 grand I was going to make in that play in this 2 summers ago. I want my 10 grand. I mean, that part I get. I don't see how this thing somehow has been expanded in some people's minds into everybody who played sports in the last 10 years is going to get a check. Where did that come from? Or is it not there?
We don't know yet. I mean, this is, you know, when they settled that case, they deliberately left the details up to the individual schools. Actually, they left it to the NCAA, which then said, fine, we're not going to regulate that. It's now up to the individual schools as to how these payouts are going to be orchestrated. And probably what I suspect is happening is that the individual conferences are looking at how much money they're going to have to kick into this pot of, what was it, $2.5 billion or something like that. How much money they're going to have to kick into that pot. At the same time, they are trying to figure out, the conferences are trying to figure out a uniform policy for their member schools on how they're going to identify athletes with legitimate claims and then apportion the payments.
But it's not it's not anything like, you played guard for Notre Dame for 2 years, you're going to get a check. You have to say that you had something else to do and make a claim, and you were restricted.
I don't know. I mean, it's perfectly conceivable that a conference could say, if we're not going to get into the weeds on who had some appearance at a gas station somewhere or who might have had an appearance at a gas station somewhere. We're going because had the money been there, we would have had many more opportunities. So you know, what we're going to do is instead of taking individual claims, we're going to identify everybody that played in revenue sports for those years, and we're going to cut them all, you know, checks based on whatever. And then maybe for a few positions, for a few people who were, you know, legitimate superstars, we'll bump it up for them. I mean, that's a perfectly reasonable way of managing it.
Well, what happens to the, well, again, this is all speculation, but what happens to the, I don't know, this is not for radio, I guess, but what happens to the smoking hot volleyball player who could easily have had a modeling thing and never even thought of it because of her, but I mean, that's not a revenue sport, so she's not going to get paid?
Well, I mean, this is what they're going to have to sort out. I mean, maybe they don't. Maybe they just say, you know what, you're not Olivia Dunn. She came along, what, 4 years ago?
Yeah.
So you're not Olivia Dunn. She came along 4 years ago. You were out there 8 years ago. Here's the take it or leave it. You know, this is how we're going to apportion it, and it's not unreasonable. And if you don't like it, sue us.
I think some people are going to get like $50 checks.
That could well be. I mean, and they may, you know, this is the whole, I mentioned that this will be a Title IX nightmare. I know Kevin thinks that it's a toss-up, and I almost came back to his email when he said, well, this is kind of a toss-up issue. you know, could go either way. And I, my first thought was, well, that's exactly the kind of field that the lawyers are going to just storm into, because there's no precedent. It's wide open. And if you are a civil rights lawyer, you're going to come in waving your, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, feminist, woke, you know, misogyny credentials, like a flag, and say this school is not treating people properly, you know, not treating their women athletes properly, blah 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 blah, and you know, you've got to make a payment. So it's going to be really interesting. It's going to be, like I said, I suspect what's happening is the member schools, 80s, the SEC conference is having their meeting, I think, down in Palm Beach right now. I suspect there are a number of sit-down sessions where people are saying, how are we going to divide this up? Nobody, and I mean nobody, wants to face the prospect of 50 or 60,000 athletes in you know, the ACC coming forward with individual claims about how they would have made X amount of money, you know, over the course of that, you know, their college careers, had this money been available. It's going to be impossible to evaluate those claims on any kind of
well, standard. Just on you and I. I mean, we discuss this. We don't argue about it. In terms of the law, if all of a sudden, you know, whatever, I can imagine myself as a male model. But if I was, I'm not house. I'm. How does this settlement settle anything for me? I'm not involved at all. I mean, why can't I still sue? Why does this settlement necessarily cover me? Why would it?
It wouldn't. You want to go hire a lawyer, go get him. You know, if you have enough money, you want to file the lawsuits. There's nothing to preclude you from going in and saying, okay, I want a piece of that pie.
No, I mean, why wouldn't I get something outside the pie? Why does the pie include me? I wasn't even there.
Well, it's...
I mean, it's a class I'm not in. I didn't opt into the class, I guess is what I'm saying.
That's fair. That's a fair comment or a fair question. I don't know how it's going to play out. I don't know whether you're going to be able to... An athlete's going to be able to come up and say, well, I should have been compensated. This settlement doesn't include me. I should be compensated.
The reason why I ask this is for those... Don't worry,
but you've got Tom. You do have a statute of limitations issue.
Okay, but what I'm saying, Lou, is when I just you probably know this, but listeners don't. That's why I'm sorry to interrupt. But if there's a class action against XYZ Corp, say
this wasn't filed as a class act. Well, okay, it was filed. Certainly, was I think it was filed on behalf of all similarly situated people. So,
okay, but in our business, when in the securities business. If I'll pick what is the top one of my screen here, if KGC, you know, which is a gold company, if there's a suit against them and it turns into a class, we will get at PTI, of something for all the people who own KGC stock or options that are able to be stock, and it'll be a little thing that says, if I want to opt out of the class, I can. Yeah. Or I'll stay with the class, and I get to do that. Yeah. I mean, none of that went out for this thing, right?
So I don't know. I don't know if this was filed as what's called a Rule 23 class action, or a class action under state law. I just don't know. It was filed that way. My understanding is it was filed on behalf of this individual and all similarly situated individuals. That's how they set the damages so high, and. The mechanics of settling something like that means that ostensibly there's a claim out there, but you may or may not decide to play ball with them, and maybe I don't think the settlement precludes, as you noted very accurately, I don't think the settlement precludes individuals coming back in and saying, well, if this was supposed to be the law, then I'm entitled to X.
Can I chime in with a question?
Sure. That's a question. That's a question already.
Did you ask that question
about a question?
So, what happens if it gets ugly and is it possible the NCAA could just say, you know, we're shutting this down and we're bankrupting the NCAA and reopening as something else?
Yeah, it's possible they could do that. I don't know.
Because companies do that, right?
Companies do that in the face of massive losses. If they were to do that, Greg, what would happen is that the settlement amount or the benefactors of this lawsuit, i.e. the lawyers, would get in line with the creditors, and I along with the other creditors of the NC2A, and they would liquidate the assets of the organization. I don't know, I don't know how that would play out.
Well, Greg, they have a huge amount of money from the NCAAs, and they can just tax the schools if they want to, and their shares of roughly $1 billion, 40%, right?
Yeah.
So there's no way they can't come up with $1 billion. No,
I'm not saying they can't come up with it, but if they decide to be, selfish, whatever, and say, we're just not going to deal with this, we're shutting down the NCAA or something.
Yeah, except they have all these assets. But the assets are there. I mean, they don't get to pass them out first.
And see, we don't know what the terms of the settlement agreement were. We don't know how the payment goes out. And again, the NC2A is basically going to tell the member schools, you guys got to sort this out. The settlement agreement itself doesn't specify how this money is going to be distributed.
So they just push it on the schools.
Yeah, but they're pushing on whoever's willing to make a decision.
Uh-huh. Now that's one aspect. I mean, it's also possible that the settlement agreement called for a special master to be appointed by the court. You want to talk about a lifetime employment position?
Wow.
A special master appointed by the court, who will manage these claims. And I mean, this is what happened with 9/11.
Is that like a trustee?
Yeah, something like that.
Or an executor?
Yep. The money goes into a fund that the NC2A just strokes a check and says, here. And by the way, the NC2A could do this. I mean, if the member schools decide, look, we're not going to screw with this, or conferences aren't going to screw with this, we're going to set up a special master to manage this, a trustee to manage this, and the money's going to go into this fund, and we will hear your claims.
That happened with Sam Bankman-Fried's company, didn't it, FTX?
Yes, something like that.
Yeah.
Lou, shifting just a hair, but not really a hair.
The more I think about it, I did listen to part of your and Kevin's discussion yesterday. The more I think about it, the more I think that there may well be some insurance in this. And so now you've got a case of whether the insurance companies are going to pay, and how they're going to manage this under their policies. There may be general liability policies that some of these clubs or some of these schools took out to offset any kind of payment like this. By the way, that gets real interesting, because if you're Notre Dame, and you took out a policy that's going to pay, 40 or 50 million, it has a policy limit of 40 or 50 million, and you're Northern Illinois, and you're stroking a check out of your general athletic fund, you're going to go to the NC2A and say, hey, we didn't have insurance, we couldn't afford it. Notre Dame bought it, they should go to the limits of their policy, and we'll tag on to that.
That'd be interesting. If I could tag onto your life insurance policy.
It doesn't matter. That's how they're gonna fight it. So,
well, Lou, I know this. Well, Kevin is very concerned. I mean, he's correct. This is happening. This is not the professor or the lawyer professor's view of the world. It's the economic guy's view of the world. I'm gonna say that this idea that we're piling onto these revenue sports and making money and paying people. At the end of the day, the only people that are going to get paid are people that are in sports that are making money. And Title IX is going to be run over like you squash a cicada, because I don't care what the federal government says. You're not paying the ladies fencing girl or the guy's soccer team if they're not coming in when they don't. Nobody can afford it. Tuition's too high. It's just not going to happen. There's going to be a professional-sponsored men's basketball, men's football, maybe women's basketball, some schools, some conferences, baseball, that's it. Nobody's going to do any of this other stuff. Hockey maybe in about 10 schools. But other than that, what's the point? Why should I pay for the lacrosse team to get scholarships, for God's sake?
I agree. I mean, I think that is the huge, maybe unintended consequence, although it could be perfectly intended, but that is the huge unintended consequence of this whole thing. As you move to a revenue model and an employee-employer model, although I don't think we're going to get to that, but as you move to the, you know, a more mercenary model, you're going to have a lot of losers.
Well, when you say that, though, when people are getting paid the amount they're allegedly getting paid, and I think it's more than allegedly, they're somebody's employee. The question is who. I mean,
I don't think they're going to come in as employees. A couple of things are likely to happen. But the first that I think is something that, you know, has a real shot, is some kind of bipartisan legislation at the federal level that says these people are not employees. They exist under the special contract status. The National Labor Relations Act and the federal employment laws and state employment laws don't apply to these people, and or at least at the federal level they don't apply. And so, you can pay them, but it doesn't come with all the other associated issues that employer-employee relationships generate, because these kids aren't employees.
All right, okay, but you and Kevin both keep slipping towards the relationship of the student-athlete with the school. And what I'm saying is they're not paying the dough.
Right. Okay, I see where you're going.
Let me ask this question. Yeah. What exactly, since this is a contract, we talked a little bit last week about the guy suing Florida and the coach and the...
Yep.
Okay, now let's take a name we all know. The kid who played quarterback for Notre Dame last year. He comes out of, Vanderbilt? He already played 4 years. He's got a fifth year because of the COVID. He signs a deal. Well, that's my question. There is a deal between him and Under Armour, who just happens to be Notre Dame's, whatever you want to call it, sponsor or provider of equipment or whatever. I guess they're a sponsor, aren't they? Is that what you call them? What are they with the? What is Nike to these schools or Under Armour?
Yeah, they're sponsors.
Okay, so somehow, some way, there's some communication with this Hartman guy. He says, by the way, we're giving you $200,000 a year, whatever the number is, and you're going to play quarterback for Notre Dame. We're not going to give you the dough, and you go play for a Nike school. Lou and I, we know that's not going to happen. Now, if that's a written contract with this kid saying you must play quarterback for Notre Dame or another Under Armour school, well, hell, that's something. Is that an employee? What is it?
It's a contract relationship for performance of services.
Okay, but he's not. But you must show up at all Notre Dame practices. You must show up at all Notre Dame games. That's pretty damn close to being an employee, isn't it?
Well, I mean, it's a services contract. You know, it's like an independent contractor or whatever. But it, you know, you will perform in the following, you know, following area.
Now, is that a workman's camp thing? If he gets hurt, does he sue them?
That's part of the issue. Why I said I think you're going to see some kind of federal legislation that says these people are not to be considered employees for purposes of federal law. Do you do a wage and hour? Do they have a wage and hour issues? Do they get overtime for film study?
Should they? Not you know, you're always talking about firms that say people are they say they're salaried with no overtime, and yet they sure as hell look like they're other people.
Right. So, but if these kids are employees subject to this kind of supervision, are they going to be hourly employees? Probably. So do you track them under federal wage law? If you're a white, you know, cornerback, and you don't get started by your club, do you claim race discrimination? Can you claim racial discrimination?
I thought you can only do that if you're black.
No. The reason I said you're white, because there's been one white cornerback or defensive back in the NFL in the last, 15, 20 years?
Dave Witzel.
These are issues that again, I think are going to have to be addressed. And I just don't think the employer-employer relationship is the model. With the union, for example, with the union issue, you know, the issue that they had at Dartmouth, they take the union vote right before, you know, right, what, five games before the end of the season. So they take the union vote. Well, 50% of your team graduates. They're no longer union members. The day the last game plays, these guys are no longer union members. So do you have to take a new vote? These guys, the new people come in. There are all kinds of just issues that just don't make sense in this scenario because the employer-employee model is not the model to use.
Well, I mean, you're always, it may not be, but you're our champion on the show for if it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck, it's a duck.
These guys don't quack like employees.
Well, but a lot of people think that if you're making $200,000 a year from someplace to do something, by the way, it sounds like an employee. I mean,
so is let's say Tom Cruise. Is Tom Cruise the employee of the movie studio?
I think for the time he's on the set.
He's got his own movie studio.
Yeah. Okay.
He's but if Paramount or you know Fox signs him to make another Mission Impossible movie, is he an employee or a Fox? No, he's an independent contractor.
And a producer.
Pardon me.
And a producer.
Well, that's right. I mean, whatever the arrangement. But I mean, he is taking direction from. You know, other people like these directors are contractors. The actors are contractors. I think these players are likely to be some variation of an independent contractor for purposes of these games. Now, if they do move into the employee model, then I think what has to happen is these guys have to stop being student athletes. They're now employees of the college, and that, you know, a condition of their employment is that they occasionally go to class, but for the most part, and Tom, you would say that this is simply a realization of the actual status these guys have.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
Yeah, so.
But Lou, it's got to be, since you've been on the show, there's got to be 100 times I've asked you as our maven on this. Say for instance. PTI wants to have some massive new website or something, and I get somebody and I say, all right, you can, we'll hire you, by the way, the job's probably only a year, because when you're done, we don't need somebody full-time doing this, we can hire you and pay you whatever, $100,000 to do it. And the guy goes, okay. And or I can say, by the way, Greg, why don't you just come in the place, but by the way, you got to be here every morning at 7, you get, you know, you're here till 4, you get 2 weeks off like everybody else, so everybody gets anything off here. But I'm going to pay as a 1099 guy. You'd be the first to say it's the same damn thing. I mean, what are you trying to do? You're directing somebody when they have to be here. You're making them come in.
Well, but that's not the test for an independent contractor.
Okay.
The test for an independent contractor is how much autonomy he has or she has in performing the work. You can tell them, look, you've got to be on site at these hours. Right, and we're going to shut down at this time, and so you can take that time off. But on a day-to-day basis, if you're not, for example, going in there saying, "All right, you're going to write these lines of code. Here are the lines of code I want you to put into the program. Here's the mechanism that I want." No, the classic independent contractor is a person who's told, "This is the result that I want. Go to it, and here's the time frame." That's a classic independent contractor relationship.
Well, you meant the reason again, why I said that, we got to go to break, but you mentioned movies, and I think of some of these movies where people disappear for 3 months and they're out in the middle of nowhere, you know, filming the damn thing. They can't do anything else for that 3 months. I mean, for that three months, you're pretty much an employee. Anyway, SP Futures down 20, NASDAQ Futures down 54. Be right back. Back to Jack.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox. The Control Freak's Guide to Life, Money, and Probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom. Greg Pappas on the board. S&P futures down 20. NASDAQ futures down 51. This is after a crummy day yesterday. The Dow futures are down over 300. That's because Salesforce is down 42. So I think the, Greg, what's the multiplier? 6.9 or something? So that's 280 points right there. That's what happens when you have these high-priced stocks in the Dow and your multiplier. I check it after the thing. I'm gonna say 6.8 something, unless it's changed, Greg, but I think I'm pretty close. Over in Asia, we've got Nikkei down 502, ouch, 1.3%. Hang Seng down 246, 1.3%. Greg, remember last week we were talking about these guys going through 19,000, 18,000, 230 now, so they're way down from there. Shanghai down 19.6%. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 3, call that flat. FTSE's actually up 20.2%, CAC around up 11.2%. So they're hanging in there, flat a little bit up over in Europe. Yesterday, Dow down 411, S&P down 39, NASDAQ down 99. NASDAQ was not as much. The Dow was down a full percent. Bonds, and this is what some of the issues are coming from, although they're down a little bit today, 4.59 on the 10-year. The Bund unchanged, 2.68. Japan up down two basis points, 106. We've got oil back under 80, 79.30, up 7 cents, but went down yesterday afternoon. Brent down 7 cents, 83.53. Natural gas up a penny, 267. RBOB unchanged at 246. We've got gold, which ran way up and it's coming back down. Still 23.35, down 560. Silver down 84 cents. Silver amazingly volatile within this range. Up, down, 2 and 3 and 4% a day, but never seems to want to break out. Copper up, down 12 cents, 466. Foreign exchange, the dollar pretty steady. 108 against the euro. Again, 127 against the British pound. I think it is moving up against the yen, though. So that's what's been happening there. Crypto, Bitcoin up 521, finally a bounce, 67,896. Greg, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports, Cubs, Sox,
is right. 641 here in Chicago. It is 53 degrees, high of 64 today. Lots of sunshine and clear tonight. Phoenix, 75 degrees, high of 104 today. Lots of sunshine again and very hot today. Cools off at night, though, 74 tonight. Traffic, inbound Kennedy from Montrose, 23 minutes, not too terrible. Inbound Edens is 47 from Lake Cook, 41 minutes from Wolf on the Eisenhower, and the Ryan is 23 minutes from 95th. Stevenson, 294, the Ryan is 40 minutes. MLB, Cubs beat the Brewers in 10, that was 6-3, or no. Yeah, so Cubs beat the Brewers. That was in 10
innings. 2 days ago.
Yeah, 6-3.
Last night, whack.
The Blue Jays beat the White Sox on the south side. That was 7-2. Diamondbacks lose to the Rangers. That was 2-4. And NHL, we got the playoffs. And the series is tied 2-2. Oilers beat the Stars. That was 5-2. And tonight is NHL and NBA playoff games. So first you got Panthers at Rangers, and then we have NBA Mavs at Timberwolves. So that's all I got, Chief. Back to you.
So Lou, we have, let me just throw one at you. I have two interesting, well, I think they are. When I was digging through how much coaches get used to make versus today. First, I have to ask you, I know you're big buddies with Karl Marx. Do you think he was wrong when he said religion is the opiate of the people and it really is sports? Lou? Did we lose Lou?
Lou's on. His mic is disabled.
No, I wonder how that happened. Sorry about that. You know, Marx has been dead for a while, so I haven't talked to him recently.
Now, if you were to judge, what's his name, Scalia, you'd say you have a zero mind. You would zero right in mentally to him.
That's right. I think sports is, you know, I mean, that's the Roman, you know, that was the Roman bread and circuses, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't that the way you kept the population from revolting? What's interesting, I would say, is that sports have become, in some ways, less important because of the diversity of entertainment options that people have at their fingertips, but in some ways more important because the leagues have been able to fill a lot of that sort of opportunity that you get from social media and from the explosion of media access. The leagues have been able to move into that pretty effectively. So I don't think sports is a diversion. I think it's, you know, it's fun, but you know, the bottom line is I think everybody looks at their grocery bill and they don't think about football when they see that. I saw that the steak at Costco had gone to the top of the line filet has gone to $26 a pound.
Wow.
I want to address a couple of foreign issues.
Yeah, I was going to say, what you said the thing about the bridge. One more quick comment on Rome. So Rome kind of increased the dole. The welfare system.
By the way, let me stop you there. Excuse me for interrupting, Greg. How often do you think about the Roman Empire?
Every day.
Tom, how often do you think about the Roman Empire?
I did some research on the dole, which is the first welfare system. And the similarities between the dole and today are scary.
Yes, they are.
So the dole was going up.
For our female listeners, the three of us think about the Roman Empire every day.
God,
this is a thing. Greg knows exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you have increase in the pomp, which means circuses. The increase of the dole. Your money's being devaluated. Nobody's working. And oh, by the way, you got lead in the water supply. Does that sound like us today?
Yeah.
Well, our food has plastic in it.
So. Well, and we had that too. We got food with plastic in it.
We've got contamination.
We got McDonald's.
All right. Yeah. Anyway, we'll go to the because you sent me the thing about the dock. What in God's name happened there?
Well, so this is a great. You remember that thing I sent you early on where when they announced this project and they said no boots on the ground, and the commentator that I sent you was a former Navy commander, and he said no. Worthwhile project starts out with a lie, and that was a lie by the administration. We were going to have to put boots on the ground. We then put, I think the whole point of making that pier there was to try to bypass the Israelis.
Without a doubt.
And say, you know, we're going to put aid into these people to satisfy our voting bloc in Michigan. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense, because that structure was exactly the wrong structure to put in place there, and people were saying that they were saying, you know, this thing only handles waves that are 3 feet high and wind speeds of 15 knots, and they get that on the Eastern Mediterranean and more in with regularity. So we build the dock, I'm pretty sure, against the advice of the Corps of Engineers and the other people. That somebody ought to be, if this was done this way, people ought to be fired. And we spent $320 million to put together something we knew wouldn't work. the Babylon Bee had a headline that said that, you know, for the next doc, the Biden administration is simply going to dump $320 million into the ocean because it'll be just as effective and nobody will get hurt.
What if they didn't want to? What if that's just on purpose? They didn't want to put anything there. They just did it as a show of. I guess there's cheaper ways to do that.
Well, that's exactly what it was. It was because if you wanted to really do this, you would use some of our. The Navy has a and Merchant Marine have a capability with ships that can literally sit offshore in shallow water, and they launch what are effectively landing craft to the shore. And these things can come right up to the shore, they drop off the stuff, and then they go back to the ship. And they can operate in whatever weather you need, and if it gets too rough, they simply go back onto the ship and they hold tight until it calms down again, and then they deliver. But we didn't want to do that. We wanted a dock because somebody in the political world said, no, it's important to have something tangible out there.
Are those the Seabees?
They're not called Seabees anymore. It's a naval construction battalions or something like that. But yeah, this was the Army Corps of Engineers and the.
Seems like they should have consulted the Navy.
Well, they did. That's the thing, Greg. They did consult them. The ops plan, somewhere there is an ops plan for this that identifies all the strengths, all the weaknesses, and the people in charge. People that made the decision, and this was a political decision because you could see from the get-go that A, it started with a lie, and B, it was something that was manifestly wrong for these conditions. But they went ahead and did it anyway. They were ordered to do it. They saluted smartly. So if I'm Congress, I the Senate's not going to ask about it because they're Democrat controlled. But if you're the House, you go to the White House and you say. Or DOD and say, we want the ops plan for this. There's nothing classified about it. You show us the ops plan for this and all the recommendations, and then we want to know why the administration said, oh, no, we're going to do this anyway.
Wouldn't that just be pacifying? It would be pacifying the base, and it's good what Israel wants too, right? It fails.
Well, Israel did not want Hamas to be supplied, and that's what was.
Yeah, but they didn't get supplied.
Israel wants the entire place to go into the ocean.
Well, I'd be fine with that too.
Okay, but, I know that. Let me ask you this, Lloyd.
Wait, hold on.
Let me just.
Doesn't it make sense though?
Let me just back up. We knew that the minute those trucks drove off that pier and went into Gaza, that Hamas was gonna hijack them, and that's exactly what happened. So we literally were. Supplying Hamas with U.S. tax-funded stuff.
Aren't we talking water and food and medical supplies?
No, we're talking mostly food, maybe some water, but mostly food.
All right.
And the Hamas people took that and then sold it.
Why? I mean, Lou, I've noticed, and I don't really know what went on in this particular thing other than the doc. Didn't make it. I'm starting to string together as I'm getting a little older. Just a huge string of what seems to be somewhat incompetence. I mean, Mike Murphy comes on and he says he shivers every time somebody says intelligence was wrong. He says it means somebody didn't listen to the intelligence, probably. What you're saying is the engineers probably said this thing's not going to work and nobody listened to them.
They absolutely.
No, I think they listened to them on purpose. They said we don't want anything to get there, so we're just going to build this as a decoy and then have it wash ashore.
That's the conspiracy theory. I'm trying to interject. There seems to be a level of incompetence. I'm going all the way back to my guys. My guys at Pullman. One of the guys was a helicopter engineer. Said everybody knew you didn't send that helicopter into Iran because the thing was horrible in a sandstorm. And sure enough, they got a sandstorm. Yet somebody. Somebody decided we're sending it anyway.
Never presume malevolence when incompetence is available as just an equally ready explanation.
That's kind of what I'm talking about.
I think this is just incompetence. I agree. There needs to be, but there won't be any accountability.
Well, there never was any accountability for the guy who knew the people were learning how to fly planes and not how to land them. I mean, there was no economy for those people either.
Here's where does the path of least resistance fall on the malevolence to incompetence scale? Because I'm thinking this was just the path of least resistance for the president to make everyone happy, or he cares about.
I doubt very seriously if Biden said, go ahead with a DAC, it's 4 months from now, I'm going to embarrass the hell to see the thing busted up. I can't imagine he would say that.
But isn't that what, they didn't want any stuff to get there, so they just did the charade, and then it fell apart.
I think that Greg's, I'm with Greg on this, I think that malevolence and incompetence are the path of least resistance.
Nobody could be that stupid. Nobody could say, I want you to use the helicopters that aren't going to make it, so I look horrible.
Tom.
He doesn't look horrible, though.
No. When you see these kinds of decisions being made that are manifestly stupid or illegal or improper, you come to the conclusion that there is a political justification there. And let's go back to the COVID vaccine. We license a COVID vaccine in August of 2021. And then promptly withdraw it from the U.S. market so that there is no licensed vaccine. That's stupid. Why would you do that?
It's somehow because the firms threatened you that if you didn't do that, they wouldn't give them to you, and you fell for it.
No, you do that, then you don't license it. You do that because it was crucial that somebody in politics be able to say, "We have a licensed vaccine. I need you to go out and get the shot because we have a licensed vaccine." Which was a lie in the sense that there was no licensed vaccine available, but the truth in the sense that FDA had actually licensed the product.
I understand, but you need to back up. I think we need to back up just a hair. The Trump administration, and this is not one or the other. I'm just saying this. It flows through whoever happens to be in the office. The Trump administration, which I thought actually made some sense at the time, gave seven companies either a lot of dough to do their own research and bought, what, a half a million or a million shots in advance in every one of the countries.
Yep.
And the other guys that cut the better deal that said, we'll research it ourselves, they got a higher price for the stuff. It was like $20 a shot or something. The other guys got 12. So Trump ponies all this money out there, just hands it to all these firms. The thought of 2 years later, the government, whoever happens to be sitting in the Oval Office, saying we don't like any of them, we'll just take the hit on this and say it was a really bad idea. Lou, it's like, what did the guy say in Freedom from Fear about the atomic bomb? Events were in the saddle and they rode the men hard.
My response to that is that by the time that we're losing track here.
Yeah.
By the time that vaccine was ready to be distributed and was being distributed, the government could have said, look, this is an EUA, it's an emergency use authorization, we can't force you to take a shot with an emergency use authorization drug, and so we're not going to. It has risks, here they are. If you're in this group, you should be getting the shot. If you're not in this group, you might want to think about it. The government could have done that, but they didn't.
Sure they could have. Or they could have said, if you already had it, you don't need it.
Because that's right, that was too nuanced, and they didn't want, they look at the population as basically sheep that are too stupid to figure this stuff out for themselves.
So that example is malevolence, is what you're talking about.
I mean, if
not
you look
incompetence
at the,
or if you, path of
if
least
look,
resistance.
If you look at the Fauci emails, you'll say that's more like malevolence. But I mean, what I'm saying is that's a political explanation for something that was manifestly stupid.
Right.
And this is what you have with this peer.
My whole point is, when you gave all these people all this money and you needed a vaccine tomorrow, somehow, some way, a vaccine was going to pop up a year from now, even if it was a measles vaccine and you used it. I mean, the momentum was just there. And I don't know if that's incompetence, malevolence, politics, whatever the hell that is.
I think it's incompetence coupled with, you know, the malevolent personal advantage empire building.
And a lot of money.
Regardless, it was a political decision.
Right, don't ever leave the money out. Please.
The fact that they were paying people for this, I mean, that was the reason that it was licensed and then immediately withdrawn is exactly the money, because it has to do it the licensing changes the liability model for the vaccines. So they licensed it and then immediately took it off the market so that the companies were not going to be subject to being sued for side effects. That because it was important to maintain the EUA status of that vaccine as long as possible.
But, well, they also told the other five or six companies that weren't
that's
first.
That's part of the rationale. Well,
they told those guys, you got nothing, right? They could never get anything. Yeah.
Real quick, let me just note the Israeli strike in Rafah appears to be, and I thought this from the beginning, at least within the laws of armed conflict, a perfectly legitimate exercise of military action. The Ukrainians have apparently managed to at least slow down, if not completely stall, what the Russians were doing in the north part of the north part of the combat region near Kharkiv, and the big question in Ukraine right now is whether the Russians are going to lose momentum or can maintain some kind of forward pressure as the aid that we've finally decided to give the Ukrainians starts to make its way in. And the big issue, I think, is going to be whether we're going to give them authorization to use our stuff on Russian territory.
Lou, the last couple of days, I know you mentioned that the last couple of weeks. I spotted an article yesterday that said they were using our stuff and they caught the Russians like 100 yards into Ukraine and wiped out a bunch of them or something. According to the article, they did not break the rule we gave them, but the Russians were a little sloppy. We're just in Ukraine and got clobbered by these new. Did you read that, or am I off?
I did. And the other article or the other push that's going out is an incident that occurred last year, where the Russians were flying a bunch of aircraft, 100 miles inside Russian territory, and the Ukrainians snuck a Patriot battery up to the border, and shot down, four aircraft in the space of about 10 minutes.
A couple of they're good ones too, right? They're good aircraft.
Yes, two of them were, $50 million fighter bombers, and we raised hell with them. We told the Ukrainians you can't do that, and. It has had a huge effect there because the Russians are using standoff weapons, glide bombs that they can launch from Russian territory that strike with precision, and there's no air there. The air defenses can't pick them up, that strike with precision on Ukrainian positions. And the Ukrainians are screaming, let us engage with our SAMs, surface-to-air missile capability, because we can drive them back far enough that they're not as accurate. And we're telling them no. And it's a real issue. And as I noted, as I told you several weeks ago, the Ukrainians are at a real disadvantage here logistically, not just in terms of weapons supplies and artillery supplies and things like that, but in terms of manpower. And as this thing grinds on, unless they have the weapons that they can use to offset the Russian numerical advantage in artillery tubes and shells, their manpower supply is going to start to diminish rapidly.
Well, we got a dash, but one question, and I think you've answered this before, but it was a while ago. What the Russian attitude? I mean, I refuse to believe they don't care that the Russian people don't care how many people get killed. I mean, somebody's sons, for God's sake. But yet, it doesn't seem like Putin seems to care. What caused the Russians to finally pull out of Afghanistan? Was it a regime change? Was it, because obviously they had the same attitude there, and they were getting their butt kicked, sort of like us. So they were getting it worse. What caused them to say one day, okay, we're out of here? I mean, did it have to come with a regime change, or did the whoever was in charge at the time say?
In part, it was Gorbachev who was looking at this, saying, "This is a black eye for us. We're not making any progress. What are our political objectives there? Whatever they are, it's not worth the meat grinder that we're feeding our people into." And he made the call to withdraw the troops.
But he had just gotten in office, right?
Pardon me?
He had just gotten in office.
He was there. He'd been there a few years.
Okay.
And had made the had started to implement Glasnost and the perestroika and the restructuring. This guy Putin is not Gorbachev, and this thing, Afghanistan was a little bit of a sort of empire expansion. Ukraine is Russia, and traditionally a part of Russia, and they see it as their territory. They want it back. and they're, you know, there's a much higher level of emotional commitment to this fight than there was in Afghanistan.
What's if it's 40 years from now, what's the solution? People from the outside saying you two idiots have to talk, and some of the land has to go to Russia, or some partition. And what do you think the solution is someday?
The solution that the Russians want is the absorption of Ukraine back into Russia.
I know, but the other guy wants every stitch of land back. It doesn't look like either one of those guys
He's not going to get it.
No, but I don't think the Russians are going to get the whole place either, do you?
In 40 years, I wouldn't be surprised.
All right. Well, so you're...
Unless we get a real shift in our foreign policy, and this president has a terrible record on foreign policy. Unless we get a real shift in our foreign policy and a real shift in NATO's outlook.
Well, NATO thinks as long as it's in Vietnam and it stays there, it's okay, as long as it doesn't...
That's basically correct, yes.
Yeah. Lou, have a nice weekend, buddy. You got anything good going on? I mean, you guys have any bad weather? Some bad weather all south. You guys had...
No, it's all east of us. We were up in the mountains last weekend. We might head up there again.
Well, have a nice time, bud. I'm doing my reunion this weekend, and my guys are all evidently some lady sports columnist somewhere wrote some blurb about the Notre Dame coach who everybody kind of likes next year, not this coming year, but the year after, will be coaching in Arkansas. So my guys, it's like you stuck a knife where the sun don't shine. They're going nuts that this can't possibly be happening. Arkansas stealing our coach. So I said, hey, how do you know she didn't talk to some goofy Arkansas booster that's willing to pay anything for a coach, and he's on some short list? He could very well be.
Right? Sure he is.
I mean, it doesn't mean that he's moving or anything. But
don't believe anything that projects out more than 15 minutes.
Oh, yeah. On that note, Lou, on that note, take care of yourself. Talk at you next week. SB Futures down 21, NASDAQ Futures down 57. Yes.
Self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Blown up by Saxon Jacks. I'm Tamal. Greg Pappas on the board. SP Futures down 21. NASDAQ Futures down 57. But, Greg, where'd you get that song? That song was played at every mass in the Morrissey Hall Chapel for 4 years when I was there, for God's sake. Not that I went inside the chapel too much, but I at least walked by the door.
For what you were talking about, world peace and then Notre Dame. And
my buddies, they were sort of the out-of-control section, right? The guys you've met, can you imagine that? They were the out of control section. So they decided in their genius to make me the RA of my buddies. I'm like, don't tell me you give me my own guys. What's the matter with you? Well, that's the only reason why you're here, is to control. Well, they ended up having a band above the chapel, and once in a while they would start playing the drums and stuff while the mass was going on, and they'd call me and have to tell them to knock off the drums while the mass is going on. I'm like, good Lord. But anyway, those long time ago. Dan, how are you?
I'm doing well, and have kind of some similar memories, not only of the song, but of I guess my whole high school and college experience at Boston College with
same thing,
listening to some music and going to a late night mass after doing a beat the clock at one of the local bars.
Yeah, well, one of the guys snuck. I don't know what he did. The altar wine, he ended up putting booze in there instead or something. God, the crazy stuff that went down. What do you make of, well, we talk about all the political stuff going on in the world, and then we talk about, you know, the business stuff, and somehow all this stuff intermeshes. You never exactly know when or how, but someday, you know, it might. I look at this Japan interest rate creeping up, and they're only up to like 1.07%, right, Dan? But talking about a place that has 263% of their debt is their over GDP. Now we just went over 100, which is pretty awful, but they're 263. But then again, 40% of their debt is owned by their central bank. So,
right.
Does that mean it's not really? If you own your own debt, how does it mean? Every time your wife goes out and, well, your wife or the husband goes out and puts money down on a credit card, the other one runs in and covers it, so the person really owes the wife or the husband. Does anybody owe anything? I mean, it's kind of a weird look at life, isn't it, when the central bank owns that much?
Who owes absolutely, who? Yeah. There's not as much. There's no sense of checks and balances. You know, you just, literally speaking, right? I think the Japan situation has really been unique, you know, over the last few decades. And I think, as you mentioned, with much lower rates and now rates finally starting to come up, there, you know, we think of, we're looking at our situation, but relative to most countries, even though we have very high debt, we are still looking like the strong leader. Because the same situation has happened not only there, but over the years in Latin America and many of the European countries. So this is not a new phenomenon. With Japan, however, I agree. Yeah, that when the government is your largest borrower, lender and borrower, it gets somewhat complicated. And it's really how they maneuver that. And that'll be interesting to see over time. I still stay on the sidelines. I would still recommend staying on the sidelines with Japan. I mean, again, you can get better rates here. You know, our equity market is still the national lead, you know, the worldwide leader. You know, I would still say we are probably, and it's not common for me to say this, but being U.S.-centric is not a bad thing right now. Being very cautious on investing in those markets, it's a lot of political risk and a lot of unknowns, and the biggest thing is a lack of experience. So this is all new to Japan right now, what's going on. So, you know, we've been through a lot of ups and downs, and history at least rhymes if doesn't repeat itself, but we kind of have, I think, a better perspective on what some of the implications can be, and it'll be interesting to see how they fall out or they follow out in Japan.
Well, the question is how much does it affect what they do, what China does? Is we've tried to yoke all these places together somehow loosely with in central banks. You really don't have, well, I guess you do if you count Venezuela and people like that off on their own little railroad, but the bigger places seem to orchestrate a lot of this themselves. I mean themselves in a coordinated effort. I mean, we don't just if we pour, you know, 30, if we devalue our currency, we do it right with the central bank of Europe, everybody else. So it doesn't look like, if you were to say the dollar is going down in value, the first thing somebody's going to say is, "What are you talking about? It's hanging right in there with the pound and with the euro and with the
right, with the rest of the economy."
But
yes.
But if you look at it in terms of an automobile or a computer, it's going down like a rock, right? I mean, so it depends on what you're looking at. I mean, I guess my question is, how much, even if the Fed here decides to be steady with their ridiculously approach to be 2% someday we'll all be dead, right? What if Japan starts leaking some more money in, or China, or somebody? Somehow it seems to be finding its way here, doesn't it?
I mean, that's happened over the years.
Yeah.
That could happen again. I mean, this wouldn't be the first time to see Japanese and Chinese investment here. In fact, it's pretty I think with Chinese investment, it's we're talking close to all-time highs. So there's it could, that absolutely could happen. I'm not sure that that's going to be the direction, and I think we have the rest of this year to sort of see how things play themselves out, sort of with the pre-election, and if there are any projections for next year in terms of how our deficit could possibly be handled going forward.
Well, what let's look at that for a second. I mean, obviously, on a personal level, and boy, have you ever get two people on the opposite sides, which, you know, it doesn't make for a great evening if you do. of the election itself. I mean, I think you and I are, it doesn't really matter if you owe the credit card company $1 billion. It doesn't really matter whether you or your wife or anybody has some view of debt going forward. It's at some point you got to pay it. I mean,
not necessarily
pay it, but because we're never going to pay down the I don't think we're ever going to pay down where the government owes nothing. I mean, I'm not so sure that's even a good idea. But at some point, you have to, you know, get off, well, at least be truthful. Right now, I think, Dan, and please disagree if you think I'm wrong, the standard economic model being used by both parties, and you can say what you want about Trump versus Biden, I don't like either one of them, but everybody knows that, it doesn't matter. The mentality now is this new monetary theory, which is total BS in my mind, but that's another story. But the idea is, we don't care. We owe $34 trillion. If that's growing 2.5% a year, and we can somehow organize an economy that grows 2.51, we're okay. Just extend it out as long as our growth is higher than the. The problem is all they do is lie to each other. Every bill is going to save this, save that, and it never does. So their view, I mean, I would say the Trump tax cuts, and again, I'm on record a million times, don't raise my taxes, you're getting enough. If somebody neutral will go through that whole tax cut right now and how it's worked out for the last 6 years, you'll find it's nowhere near what the promise was. In terms of,
absolutely.
And I'm going to say, if you took Biden's, or what was his original, was the infrastructure, whatever the hell the thing was, $1.5 trillion when he first came into office, there are all these different names, and how it was going to be accretive, that's BS too. It's nowhere near accretive. So between the two of them, we got $3 trillion a year that probably isn't doing anybody any good other than running a deficit, maybe a little bit of good. So you at least got to come, if that's your new mantra, at least it's got to be truth in lending of some kind. Or truth to
absolutely, yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, the thing that I've been thinking right now is we're talking about the deficit, and we're talking about it was if you recall, everything was put, you know, it was a huge issue last year, and then all of a sudden everything's pushed up to January of 2025, right? So in other words, whoever has to deal with it in January of 2025 is going to be probably doing, as they say in the legal field, another continuance. It's just going to keep, you know, they're just going to keep kicking the ball down the field. It's the concern that I have with it is that this is a real issue and that it should at least start being addressed. And this can have bigger, you know, ramifications to our economy. And I don't think, and I agree with you, both political sides have some serious issues that could be very negative in terms of their policies for the economy. Maybe not quite so much for our financial markets, but certainly for the economy that will eventually impact the financial markets. So there are some things happening. I have a kind of an interesting perspective that I thought of this past week. So we're talking about big picture and all the issues that can happen with the global economy and higher interest rates, but start looking at the little guys, like the small businesses that have started to open, and they got a lot of money pumped into them during the COVID period. There were a lot of benefits to small businesses that has taken a back seat. And what's interesting is small business owners are faced with challenges still of hiring good talent, good labor, having to pay more for labor, having to pay, you know, costs of everything, as we had talked about last week, for your household, everybody's costs are higher, insurance, medical costs, all that. Well, now put yourself in the mind of a small business owner all your costs have increased and you're trying to get your business started or at least maintain your business or hopefully grow it, and now you're dealing with all these challenges. Throw on top of that an increase in regulation in a lot of fields, like in legal field, our field, the investment business, medical field, pharmaceuticals. All of that is going to make it more difficult for small businesses to really succeed. And small businesses are still they're still the core of our economy.
Yeah, if somebody wanted to give you a restaurant or an independent pharmacy, if they wanted to give it to you, would you take it?
Absolutely not.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
And it's interesting, Chief, I've talked to people that I know that own a number of different businesses that are closing. And these are small business owners that just can't make ends meet. And it doesn't necessarily mean that their service or their food, let's say in a restaurant, the quality of their service and their food has gone down. In fact, in many cases, it's gone up. But they still have these huge costs to absorb, and they can't keep passing them on to the consumer. So as a result, higher rent costs, if you're talking about a restaurant, in the service industry, really higher costs of labor and getting that talent, getting those people trained. So these are challenges that have always been there, but I think they're amplified right now. So that's sort of the other side. We've been talking about the big picture and the global issues, but the small, if you look at who really runs our economy, the core of our economy is going to be, I think it's going to be under a lot of pressure going forward because of, higher costs and a lot of the challenges they're facing.
Dan, I got a call from Audrey and Nancy, the ladies that are on Monday.
Yes.
And they were, I'm sure even though you don't come to Chicago that often, you've heard of Manny's, the deli on the south side.
Yes.
But it's been renowned for every politician, everybody goes in there. Well, I stopped there for lunch yesterday. I think Nancy had a half a sandwich and a side. Audrey had a sandwich, and they both had coffee or something. I think it was $60.
Wow.
And and she said it was, she goes, every time you come in here, you see firemen, policemen, salesmen. You see every politician who's hungry. She goes, there's like 9 tables full. The place is empty.
Now, interesting, yeah.
I think if you study economics and things get out of hand, you say the leases are too high. Well, now we're seeing these buildings in Chicago essentially go for 20 to 50 cents on the buck. Yesterday, John Flanagan, we'll probably talk about more tomorrow, John Flanagan was saying that the Holiday Inn Express on Wabash went for 55% of what it did 6 years ago or whatever. And some of these other buildings are going for 20 cents on what the mortgage is, that kind of thing. Now, does that mean that the restaurant downstairs, if there is one or there was one and somebody wants to put themselves in there, instead of 20 grand a month rent, are they going to be able to get it for 12 and maybe make a go of it? I mean, is this going to work its way down to, okay, I couldn't pay 20 grand a month?
It already has in some places.
Yeah. It's like, it's a lot of omelets, 20 grand or something. I mean, is it brutal as it is, the economic adjustment like that, is it actually going to happen? It's working its way down. I don't know. What do you think?
I think it will. I actually think it will. I think it is happening. I mean, some of these leases are longer term. So it wouldn't be the same as thinking about an individual leasing an apartment or a house. It would be, they're generally going to be 5 years, maybe 7 years. And sometimes the rates are locked in, and it makes it difficult for somebody coming in that might want to buy that business, unless that other business goes bust or leaves. So there is an incentive. I know the little gym in the town I'm in Punta Gorda has really big challenges, even though it's packed with people all the time. It doesn't have any problems getting customers in, members in. But they, talking to the owner, they have trouble paying the high rates of the rental rates there, and that's not stopping. That's going to continue to be a big problem for them, and the property value are still an issue. It's not so much an issue getting somebody new to come in and take a new facility. It's an issue for those existing businesses to continue to be able to make ends meet.
Well, by he was on a show a couple of times, my buddy Butcher Restaurant Al. How's the other name? But he signed. He was involved in this Italian restaurant and blah blah blah. And he was saying how they all of a sudden had to pay. Greg, you know what this would be? $13 for busboys and dish guys instead of 10. This is going back a few years. And I said, Al, if you knew you had to pay 13, would you have signed that lease? And he immediately said, hell no. So you look at the lease at the time, you look at the costs, and the costs go up and your lease is the same, all of a sudden you're underwater. But I want to ask you a quick question, and I'll ask Greg here. He's our research guy. Greg, did you find out what DraftKings, and who's the name of the other big gambling
place? FanDuel.
Yeah, what they did yesterday to stock, was it yesterday or the day before? Dan, we talk once in a while, and I don't know if sometimes the listeners connect what I'm connecting mentally, but we'll talk about taxes, we'll talk about budget deficits, and then we'll talk about the market. Well, there is a connection. I mean, if all of a sudden whoever lands in the White House...
This week they're down 16%.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If everybody... If you look, without whoever lands in the White House, let's hope it's Solomon, and maybe not either one of these guys, but that's not going to happen. All of a sudden next March, somebody's going to say, hey, we're friggin' broke. No matter what it is. And maybe taxes are part of it. I don't think people can pay it. Some of the companies look like they have a lot of money. I'm not so sure that's a solution either. But basically, somebody somewhere, I don't think 3 years from now, corporations are not going to be paying 21%. I practical guarantee it, the words of Walter Brennan. But now look what happened. The state budget just came out yesterday, and in it is a new tax for gambling.
Yes.
And what'd you say down that day, Greg? How much were those two stocks down?
Well, to put it in perspective, this year they're still up 50%.
Okay.
Or if you go from May to May. However, this week they're down 16.25%.
Okay, so what happens to all these? What happens to the powerful seven that are all trading, 12, 14 times revenue if all of a sudden their taxes go from 21 to 35, assuming they pay any?
That'll impact them, absolutely.
Sure will.
There's no question. No question. There'll be a major correction in the market, downturn in the market, because just as there was when we saw that precipitous drop in corporate taxes. I always believe the thing I do like about the way the Fed acts is I do believe a little bit at a time on the way up and a little bit at a time on the way down when it comes to the Fed and interest rates. And likewise, the same with taxes. Not these big moves, but like gradual moves, and maybe like a little bit of a budget to see what the increase, if it is, if you will, where that's going to go. So yeah, no question about it. One thing I want to mention, and for the listeners, and I keep saying this is a good time to lighten up a little, not to sell, but when all the signals are saying, we're expected to see more volatility, a slowdown, the issues, as I mentioned, on the small company side, the issues we've been discussing about higher rates, this is the time that are absolutely going to impact higher taxes and higher rates and potentially tariffs and difficulties in the labor force. These are not going to be good things for our economy going forward. So the economy, I think, will continue to chug along. I think what we're going to see is a correction in the market, because the market still, to me, seems overvalued. We're still looking at future earnings and all this extreme optimism on AI. So I would say is take a little bit off the top. Take advantage of the fact rates are high now. So we've been talking for years, a whole year and a half or 2 years now about T-bills, and they still look really good. The 3 and 4 month T-bills are still, you can still get 5.40. And that doesn't seem like much, but it's a lot more than you're getting at the Bank of America in your savings account. And it's a good place to park some of your money. One other thing, Chief, though, that I'm going to mention today that's it's new and a little different. So now, if you do believe rates are going to come down, which they will eventually, start looking at slightly longer treasury bonds. So we're looking at 1.5 years, 1.5 year treasury notes with a 5% coupon. Let's say the ones that are due in November of 2025 or October of 2025, you can get a nice fat 5% coupon at a discount. So you get maybe 5.25, 5.20, and you can lock in some really good yield. This, to me, is a good place to park your cash. a good place, because during between the, you know, over the next 18 months, we will see rates, I think, remain relatively high. But I also think that the likelihood of cuts will be coming sometime. So going out a little bit longer than just T-bills, maybe having half your money in T-bills and half your money in 1.5 year Treasury bonds, you want to start locking in some of that yield. This strategy that is what we've been using with clients, and I think it makes a lot of sense to see that nice fat 5% coupon. And for a lot of people who are looking at income, that's a nice income stream.
Dan, two questions. Whenever you talk, you always give me more questions. When you come on Stocks and Jocks and you talk and you just say something that makes perfect sense. Now, of course, you didn't give any real advice. You're just saying an individual people, depending on where you are on the yield curve, maybe something a little safer for a part of it is a little more rational going forward than maybe it has in a rearview mirror, is what you just said, right? I mean, it's
yes,
but you're not going to tell somebody 22 years old to be 100% in T-bills. But at the same time, you're probably going to tell somebody 85, maybe you don't need everything in high tech, you know, type of thing. So it's a question of who the person is and where they are along the line, and whether they're still earning money. But anyway, it's a long story. But when you say that on Stocks and Jocks, and I do too, it's easy to say. When you talk to somebody who's, like, I have client meetings actually this week a lot. When you talk to somebody who's maybe retired and somehow has been on this amazing ride for the last 10 years, actually back to 2007, really, and you say, boy, you know, maybe the next 2 or 3 years aren't going to be the same. You should be maybe looking at a little more fixed income, a little something. Well, yeah, but I've been doing really good. I know that. And that's the whole point is, you know, it's not what you make, it's what you keep. And what do you think going forward? Well, I don't know if it looks as good, but now do you want to lighten up? Why do I want to lighten up? It's been doing great. All of a sudden, it becomes very circular. And it looks, and all of a sudden, you feel like you got four heads and everything you're saying is just going in one ear and out the other.
Absolutely.
I mean, how do you deal with that without, you're looking at, I actually saw somebody who was a retired judge a while ago, and I didn't see his portfolio or anything like that. I don't even know his last name. But I just said, you know, how's your stuff doing? Oh, it's been doing great. Well, what do you think going forward? I don't think it's going to be as good. Were you thinking of changing anything? Why would I do that? Okay, then. I mean,
yeah, that's absolutely a challenge. We do have full discretion with our clients' assets. So I don't get into too many of those discussions. However, I do get into those discussions with, say, prospective clients or friends or people who seem to think they know a lot more than I do about my industry. So. So I understand that. I think the way I handle it is to give the advice, like just as I did earlier, say protect some of this. There's a number of different strategies you can use to preserve and protect this capital that you've worked really hard for. And then say, you know, remember this time period. You know, we've gone through this before. Remember the late 80s. You know, remember the crash in 87. Remember the 90s, the early 90s. Remember the peso crisis, and then remember the late 90s with long-term capital and .com. Then remember, you know, and we can keep going and going. And long-term, what do you call it? 08.
Dan, they blotted it totally out of their mind.
They have. And I think one point that you're making, Chief, which is really good, is that in this particular situation, we had a COVID bubble, a COVID dip, if you will, right? We had a pandemic dip. So a lot of people can say, that's, you know, once in a 100,000 years or whatever, once in 100 years event. It's not a common event. But if we got to go all the way back to 08 or really 09 when the recovery started in the financial markets, that's a 15-year period. And that people's memories aren't that long. And they're, you know, the optimism, I think everybody wants to be optimistic. And there might be some behavioral stuff going on here, too, that people are saying, yeah, you know, we went through this really difficult period with the pandemic and all this volatility. And, you know, now I just want things to be good. So I'm going to believe that things are going to be good. So there might be a little bit of that self-fulfilling
I think more
prophecy
than a little. Dan, let's go to break, and then we'll pick this up. But S&P futures down 12 now only, NASDAQ futures down 22. Again, Dow's down a bunch, but that's all because of CRM, Salesforce, down almost $44, 16%. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Greg Pappas on the board. S&P futures now down 1350. We're trying to make a comeback here. NASDAQ futures down 28. Dow futures, though, they're still buried, down 337. That's because, like I said, Microsoft's down 431, and Salesforce is down now $44. So it's got to be close to being at its low, I think, Greg. Over in Asia, we're kind of whack-whack over here. Nikkei down 502, 1.3%. Hang Seng down 246, 1.3%. That's a big move. Shanghai down 19.6. They're not as bad. South Korea, their market is down even more, so they're getting their butt kicked there. Over in Europe, DAX is actually up 12, call that flat. FTSE up 30.4%, CAC around up 22.3%. So Europe stocks higher despite gloomy global sentiment. So there you go. Yesterday, Dow was down 411, S&P down 39. NASDAQ not as bad, only down, well, I say only down 99. That's only 0.6% because they were at record highs. Bonds down five ticks to 4.58. This is the 10-year rate. The Bund down 1 basis point, 2.67, and Japan down 2 to 1.06, but still hanging over 1%, which is, you know, it's about a many year deal for them. Oil down 36 cents, 78.87, right back after a blip over 80 yesterday, right back in this high 70 number. Brent down 50 cents, 83.10. Natural gas down 4 cents, 2.62. RBOB down 2 cents, 2.43. We've got gold. Ran way up, then ran down yesterday. It's down a little bit. Down 480, 23.36. Silver down 87 cents. It's almost 3%. 31.50. Copper down 14 cents, 4.64. Foreign exchange. Dollars slipped from two-week high. But when they're talking about this, this is really talking about the against the yen, because it's been about 108.2 against the euro now for a while. Same thing against the pound, 127.2. So the big moves have been like in the yen versus euro, yen versus pound, and some with us, but it's the yen that's been doing the moving. Crypto up 623, 67,997. Yeah, Greg, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, everybody. It is, let's see, now 56 degrees here, high of 64 today.
Chilly last night.
Yeah, a little chilly. Phoenix, it is almost 80 degrees right now, high of 104 today, lots of sunshine, and tonight it will cool off to 74. Traffic, we got 40 minutes inbound from Montrose, 59 minutes in from Lake Cook, Eisenhower is 48 minutes from Wolf, the Ryan is 27 minutes from 95th, and Stevenson from 294 to the Ryan is 48 minutes. Cubs lose to the Brewers. That was 6-10. Blue Jays beat the White Sox. That was 7-2. Diamondbacks lose to the Rangers 2-4. And Oilers beat, or this is NHL now. Oilers beat the Stars 5-2 at home. And tonight we have the Panthers at Rangers and the Mavs at Timberwolves. And that's all we got, Chief.
The Sox are pushing for the worst record like ever, right?
The White Sox are like 15 and 40 something, and yeah. I know that they're 10 and 20 at home, so it's, the record's a lot better at home than it is overall.
I want to see a list of worst Major League Baseball season win-loss records. Dan probably knows this off the top of his head. And then we'll let's go to the modern era. Modern era, 1991 to present. Well, they've got, I think in 162 game season, the worst is the 2019 Tigers. They were 47-114.
Wow,
that's pretty bad. Someplace has to be the 62 Mets, but they're not even on this list. But they had a 2003 Tigers. Are there anybody else we know in the modern where I can say 2018 Baltimore Orioles?
Baltimore. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, I was gonna say those guys are. Well, actually, the Tigers were worse. Baltimore was 47-115. In 2019, the Tigers, they were 47-114. So they must not have made up a game or something. Ouch! They didn't care enough to do that.
The Philadelphia Athletics in 1916.
Yeah,
well, that was 36-117.
235.
Ouch!
They didn't even win one game out of four. They were 54.5 games behind. Wow. That's pretty bad. Well, the St. Louis Browns were 64.5 games behind, and I wonder who those guys became. Who did the St. Louis Browns become, Dan? Do you remember? I don't remember that. I mean, I don't remember.
I was just thinking when Greg was saying the Philly Athletics. I mean, I assume Oakland took over.
Right, they moved to Oakland.
Yeah, right.
There's a move. They should have stayed in Philly.
Yeah.
they had some good years out there. It's just, I mean, the amount of injuries. I mean, you know, for those that don't know, Dan is a serious athlete. Still lifts weights and so forth. Where do you think, Dan, all these soft tissue injuries are coming from? The guy in the Cubs, the Asian dude, what's his name? Greg. The guy pulls an oblique running to first base. How do you do that?
The St. Louis Browns. What did they move? They moved eastward.
I think they moved to. Boston, didn't they?
Nah, I don't think so.
No? It was somewhere. Anyway, the amount of injuries, these teams are decimated. I mean, I don't know if they're stretching too much, working out too much, if there are too many weights, something's going down, but it's, I don't begin to know the physiology of it, but it sure seems like guys are hurt a lot. And
Yeah, absolutely, and I know what you're saying because it's true with a lot of sports, and for whatever reason lately I've just seen a lot of younger people with knee replacements, knee surgery, hip replacements, shoulder replacements. Some of it might just be not sort of following the protocol in terms of kind of trying to do it on your own when it comes to working out, or maybe just doing too much, as you mentioned. And I think your body needs to rest. Doesn't matter how old you are, your body still needs to recover. And the pace that a lot of, especially, I'm thinking about pro sports, but especially baseball, the number of games they play per year, the repetitive motion that a pitcher has, the quick starts. I mean, it would happen in any sport. Like it would happen in certainly in basketball or any sport where there are quick movements and short movements. The interesting one, Chief, is pickleball, because I've played with my neighbors a couple mornings this week, and they're already talking about injuries. Everybody has an injury, and it's the people who play more often, the ones who play 7 days a week, that have every injury in the book. So it's it's that repetitive motion, I think, that causes the problem without having the time to recover.
Kevin says the St. Louis Browns became the Baltimore Orioles.
Oh, okay, interesting.
So here's a question for you, Mavens, before we get back to the market. Why is it that Babe Ruth, when he left Boston, it was the curse of the Bambino. They didn't win for another how many years?
Right, absolutely.
Greg, we'll test your memory. They sold Babe Ruth for, I forget how much money it was, but why did the guy want the money?
A candy bar.
No, he wasn't. But no, he wanted to start a Broadway production called No No Nanette. He used the money.
Seriously?
He wanted the money for the Broadway production, so he sold Babe Ruth to get the money for the production. But the interesting part is he was sold. He was signed by the Baltimore Orioles. He grew up within 2 miles of the old park, above a saloon, and he ended up in the orphanage.
Wait, is that real? They really wanted to fund a Broadway show, so they sold their best player?
Yes. Yeah.
It's pretty wild.
Yeah.
I think you should make a movie
best
about
player,
that.
Well,
right?
Then it's, that's, like, that became the curse. The curse of the
yes,
but
right.
I mean, wow,
yeah.
For a
these
Broadway
owners,
show,
these owners were weird ducks. I mean, not that they aren't anymore, but they were even weirder ducks. So, but in Baltimore, they signed him out of the orphanage, and he was only, Dan, I'm going to say 16, 17, somewhere
yeah.
in there. And in order for him, for the priest at the orphanage to let him go, the guy who owned the Baltimore Orioles, he made him adopt him.
Huh. Interesting.
And then the guy still sold him to Boston for like next to nothing. He totally reneged on the agreement with the priest. Or I guess he still was adopted something, but he kicked him to Boston. And yet there's no curse there. I mean, what
right.
if Baltimore would have hung on to the guy all those years?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, some of these stories are just bizarre world, aren't they?
They are. I don't know if some of it is just us looking back in hindsight, too. But we knew, you know, I'm sure back then, everyone knew that we're talking about a star player. You know, we're talking about trading. And yeah,
well,
I mean, I guess in some ways
pitched.
The same thing still happens today.
Well, he just pitched
you know?
for Boston. I mean,
yeah.
They must have known he could hit, but the Yankees are the ones that said, no, you can hit every day, right?
Right. It was the Yankees, exactly.
I'm surprised they didn't use him in relief like every 4 days or something, but they never did. They just said, no, you're concentrating on hitting. And he did, obviously. I was, we'll talk about it next week, old Dan, because we like talking sports, but I got to think some guy who now has, I'll see if I can find it. I'll never find it quick enough. But it had to do with how many people have hit 500-foot home runs. And this is a guy who goes back. We talk about him. I hope he's rich. He goes back and he researches every one of people's home runs, like the Mickey Mantle 565-foot home run. Well, the guy ended up supposedly landed in this intersection and then bounced across the street somewhere. Well, the guy got all the plats. You can still find all the stuff in cities of the old stadium.
Oh, cool.
And found out just how far it was.
Cool.
From to go over the fence and how far it went. It turns out it was a 505-foot, not 565. But he's going back. And Babe Ruth has more 500-foot home runs than like the next three people combined.
Wow.
I mean, it's a... We'll talk some business. I'll see if I can find it. But it's a... I mean, he has a bunch. And anyway, I'll find him, but if I can. But what... So what... I mean, right now, what do you think about just the overall... The debt levels... Who knows when that's going to change, Dan? It may never change. So we can't be trading on that. We're just looking at it going, I'm a little nervous here, right? But you look at the prices of some of these stocks, and I've never seen stocks this big, this highly priced. I mean, I've seen growth stocks, you know, forever being highly priced, and sometimes they really grow into them, and it turns out there was a really good price, and sometimes they don't, and it goes the other way. But I don't think I've ever seen stocks like Microsoft, even Nvidia's getting that big, or Tesla or Apple. I've never seen those stocks that big. Stocks that if they doubled, they'd have to take over to Mars instead of just the Earth. This high. I mean, have you? I mean, I don't.
The absolute levels are astronomical. There's no question about it. But we have been through periods where other industries, you know, the growth of the big banks, you know, like. At one point, it was looking like there were just a few banks that were dominating, and you know, the side, they just seemed like they just kept growing and growing, and that isn't that, you know, that's fairly recent as well. But with tech, to me, it's very hard because we don't have the history that we do have with other industries. So we know when a steel company is getting too big, we know when, and we can go back in history, we don't have that history with tech. In fact, in my mind, the history that we have with tech tends to be, you know, we've had a lot of fits and starts. We've had periods where, you know, the beta, if you will, the additional volatility, the greater volatility of the market, you just see these things swing way up, and then some of them are going to really swing way down. Not all of them, but some of them will. So it's really doing your homework and really getting to know the companies and the management and you know, knowing which ones are going to survive, you know, any difficult period that they have in front of them. I don't think they all go down at once unless there's some global event that causes an issue. But yeah, everybody's putting their same chips, you know, on the table. You know, they're choosing, okay, we'll all put our money here. And we have to remember something, that diversification is so important. There are so many other good companies out there that are fairly valued or even undervalued that are good opportunities in sectors that are boring but still offer upside potential. And then again, keeping part of that portfolio protected is important. Going back to your comment earlier, Chief, about the age, it depends on age, but it really more importantly depends on time horizon. So a young person, and I've done this for a lot of my friends' kids, or for just younger people who are looking to save for a home, and especially where homes aren't affordable. So here's how can you invest in a newlywed couple that is looking to buy their first home. Well, putting money in protected strategy in 5.5% treasury bonds, you know, with the 1 year, looking out about 1 year or so as their time horizon to make that purchase is really important. So time horizon, I think, is essential, looking at what that person's time horizon is. On the other extreme, somebody who is older, and I have a few clients who do this, they're looking to pass their assets on to their children, grandchildren, the legacy. So those people, you can take a little more risk in their accounts, even though they're age-wise, they're past retirement and all that.
Well, Dan, what if anything, does the intricacies of the tax law play when you advise people? So, I mean, what I say is, let's say, for instance, we could read tomorrow's newspaper today, which wasn't there a Twilight Zone episode about that?
Yeah, exactly.
Greg, you're too young, but the guy saw his name in the obituaries, and he went through the whole day trying to figure out how he died and how he was going to avoid it. But anyway, we don't want to do that. But if I were to say, boy, I went into a coma like in the movie and saw the future. If I were going to say, in the next 6 months, Microsoft's going to go from 424 to, let's say, 324. But then over the next 3 or 4 years, it's going to come back, and where are we? In the year 2032, it's going to be, higher than it is now. All right, so we're in for the long haul type of thing. Now, the question is, what would your advice be? Would you, if somebody's basis on it was, let's say, $20, which is probably really low, but Microsoft base could be $35 because it was there forever, right? It was a decade. It was at $35. What would you say? Would you say sell it, pay the taxes, and then when it gets down there, we'll buy it again and write it back up? Or we just say, I don't even know what.
I would usually say, those might be the stocks you want to hold in your the ones that you want to move that you might want to add and then trim. You want to start, those would be the ones you want to hold in your IRA. But if it isn't an individual, if it isn't a taxable account and you're looking at tax consequences, yeah, you have to go back to your original basis. So some of it, we have states like Florida where we don't pay state income tax, but for most states, you're looking at that double whammy, if you will, if you make a quick decision. I've always been a believer in trading into a stock and then gradually trading out, unless there's some news that is going to impact the price tomorrow, like in a significant way. As I keep saying, and I'll keep repeating this, trimming positions, you're not going to have as much. You're going to protect yourself more all the way around. You're going to diversify, and your tax consequences won't be as high. So what I've had, Chief, to go back to your question, is I've had some clients that have, on their own, made decisions to sell very quickly. I need to get all of this because I want to put all this money into my second home. We're doing a remodel. So they take all the money out all at once, out of their taxable or individual brokerage account. And then later they're saying to me, well, what happened? Why did we have to pay taxes? And I says, well, partly because I've done a good job, because we've made money for you. But I says my advice would have been to take it out gradually and to shift. The other thing I will say, hand in hand with your question, is in terms of the diversification on the bond side, municipal bonds have been a very good investment the past few years. It's one of the few places you can still get decent yield without having to pay tax. So Most of the individual taxable accounts that we manage, and again, most of what we do is bonds and stock and more conservative stocks. But on the bond side, most of those clients have exposure to the municipal bond market. So that's another way of handling it.
I should know this, but I think I know the answer. I'm going to ask you because I know you know the answer. At a municipal bond, you don't have to pay any interest, correct?
Right.
But if a guy, like a real clever guy, say like Dan Janitas, were to buy me some municipal bonds at 92, and 6 months later they're trading 105, and I say off those things, I still have to pay that capital gain, right?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, for most bonds, it really, you know, there are some that have, where you have each bond has its own indenture and the way it's, but say it's a 5% coupon.
I don't have to pay any interest I got, but if I made $10 on the bond itself, that's still a capital gain, right?
Right, that's true. But there are certain bonds that are discounted already, where the interest it's like accrued interest, so that it gets taxed.
Okay,
it would have the tax benefit. But for most bonds, right, where you're saying you're getting a decent coupon, let's say 5%. So if you look at the prices of municipal bonds, the ones that have the higher coupons, the higher, you know, interest that's paid, they tend to be, believe it or not, more expensive than the ones that have, you know, lower coupons or trading at a discount. And that's precisely for the reason of the tax advantage. So yes, the answer, long-winded answer is yes, you do pay capital gains as you would with other bonds, other stocks.
Do you pay it when you... I'm grilling you here, and I hope I'm not walking where I shouldn't be, but back when we were talking about 1981 last week, if I were to bought one of those 30-year bonds at 65 that were, the coupon was 8.5, so actually the rate would have been, what, 12.5 or somewhere in there.
Right.
If I held on those things for, you know, 15 years or something, hopefully not the whole 30, and I actually get my 100 grand, is that a capital gain or is that ordinary income?
No, that's and what is your price again?
Well, they were trading 65, so.
Yeah, no, you would have to pay gains. You would have to pay the gains, capital gains on the principal portion of that.
And then the other part is the interest. But here, by the way, I did find this article. This guy Jenkinson, who's the guru on home runs, all right, he claims the Mickey Mantle one actually only went 520 in the year, the alleged 565. He also verified that Babe Ruth did hit a home run that went 575 in the year.
Wow. What about Hank Aaron?
Funny you should get to that. Home runs over 500 feet are rare, but they have happened over 100 times. Giancarlo Stanton hit one in 2016 that either went 495 feet or 504, depending on which tracker. Even with today's modern equipment and computers, they can't agree on the distance of a ball with video of the home run. Chris Bryant hit one 495. It hit a sign in the final distance as an estimate of the unimpeded flight. Okay, Ruth hit the most verified 500-foot home runs, over 50. Jimmy Fox and Mickey Mantle hit around 25 each. Mark McGwire hit 12.
Yeah,
Reggie Jackson hit a few. This is probably Josh Gibson hit a bunch, but nobody can tell where those are. He's notably Mr. Janitas in the last sentence. Barry Bonds, Willie Mays, and Hank Aaron never hit a 500-foot home run.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
500 is a long.
Yeah, about Bonds, I would have thought, too. I would have thought, yeah.
Interesting. I mean, 500 is ways.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
I think I might have seen one once. Greg, you know Wrigley Field, you know, very well.
Yes.
Well, our seats were first row upper deck on the third base side. All right, so we actually were looking, well, I ended up closer to home plate, but the original ones were further down. So you're about near first base, say. So you're looking right down the street out in the left field. Well, Dave Kingman, who was a monster, whacks this one and the wind's blowing out and it kind of bent. It landed across the street, in the street that starts from, like, there's a dead end street there, in the street, right in the dead middle, and the ball was bouncing. I could see it for like a block and a half and lost sight of it. But I'm going to say, outside of Wrigley, across the street and a few feet down the block, has got to be 480 anyway, wouldn't you say? I don't know if it was 500, but it was pretty darn far. I mean, he had a little wind aid. And Glenn Allen, he'll put one on the roof of the building over the left field wall, if you remember that. That had to be close. in unimpeded flight. I was not there that day, but the Kingman one, I'm like, that ball could still be going. right down the middle. Good news is it didn't hit anybody's windshield. It was just going right down the middle of the street. But, I mean, once in a while you see something like that, but it's pretty rare for somebody of that kind of speed, bat speed. But, I mean, Babe Ruth, he was a heavy bat guy. He was a huge man, and he just, well, strong man, and he just, every part of his body was coming forward, right? So, I mean, if anybody was looking to hit the cover off the ball, it was that guy. Many, evidently pulled it off 25 times, huh? Or 50.
That's amazing, yeah.
So, what do you make going into, do you see any difference? We're talking about changing gears. Any real difference is the who wins the White House in terms of the market? I mean, or are they all locked into the debt or whatever else to the point where there's no wiggle room either guy?
So, yeah, and there's been a lot of talk about this lately, and then I have my opinion as well, but I think, for the most part, the election is not going to have a major impact on corporate earnings. However, it will when we start thinking about issues like, as you just mentioned earlier, what's going to happen if there's any increase in corporate taxes. That's going to be detrimental to companies' earnings as well as to the stock market. The other issues that could potentially be an issue would be, if Trump gets in, would be tariffs and, potentially continuing to support workers. That we're right now a lot of businesses are able to pay reasonable wages without having to overpay to get staff. So those issues could have an impact. I do agree, though, with most strategists that our market will be somewhat independent. The financial markets will be somewhat independent going forward, unless there are any major policy shifts. And even though there's talks about policy shifts, as we know, a lot of those get delayed. So the market we're already ahead of that. We're like at least 9 months ahead. So we're already into a period when we're looking at, earnings next year. And I'm not seeing that much of a correction based on the election. I do think, however, that we're going to see a lot of, between now and November, we're going to see a lot of volatility. Because a lot of people are going to have thoughts, well, if Trump gets in, this isn't going to happen, or if Biden remains in office, we'll see higher taxes. And I don't know I don't know if any of that's true. That's somewhat speculation. But right now, today, the stock market is saying it really doesn't matter.
Yeah, I was going to, when you look at the long term on this, and boy, if you ever want to get into an argument right away, all you got to do is say this to anybody. We had a big set to over in the bar. Greg was on, of course, the opposite side of me, regarding like oil production. And I said,
why would I do that?
Because you like to argue.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You and your buddy Jimmy. And Greg, the other Greg.
Jimmer.
But the idea that this administration has been horrible to oil. Well, the fact is, we're up from 9 million barrels a day to 13. I mean,
Yes.
The question is, how much of what they say actually even happens? I mean, I don't think anybody could actually have been. Of course, the prices were going up, so the winds were with these guys. But what I'm saying is that you look at the China situation. I mean, Trump was very vocal, in his way of doing things, with the tariffs and all the stuff for the Chinese. I don't know that the Biden administration has been much easier on him. Do you? In some ways, I think they've been harder. It seems like the policy has been pretty much.
If you really pay attention, they're fairly similar in the way that in terms of policies like tariffs and dealing with outside. And Biden said, just as Trump said, we want to protect our country's economy. So they may go at it slightly different ways, but at least, for example, with tariffs, I don't know. So that's why I don't know that there's going to be any major policy shifts too quickly after the election. And I think the markets are reading that. And that's why there's still optimism in the markets.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at policy, I mean, just on the oil part, the only president in the last however many that actually had a decrease in oil production was Bush. And there's a guy who came from the industry.
And right, exactly.
I mean, he would never have guessed that.
He still believes. He still touts the industry. So yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's interesting that we have that perspective that we can. Yeah.
Well, Dan, we have to dash. We'll see you next Thursday, if not sooner. Yeah. In shorter weeks. I don't get to talk to everybody as much, but next week's not a short week. Be back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks. S&P's down 15. NASDAQ futures down 40. So coming back some, but still down. See you tomorrow.
That's all, folks.